The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
All right, Austin, what I want you to do is I want you to imagine an ideal or a funny scenario for the gang from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia to be in that you would love to see an episode about, whether that's, I had a couple ideas just to start jumping off points, like the gang goes to space, or the gang is in World War II, or the gang is in Star Wars, or the gang is in Lord of the Rings, or like just like any scenario where you think it would be funny to witness what the gang gets up to.
Give
me some ideas.
I mean, the first one that comes to mind, just right off the top of the old dome here, is definitely a Super Bowl sequel episode of the gang going to the big game. And, you know, obviously the Chiefs would be involved somehow and they would lose the game, which would be honestly, I mean, from the standpoint of It's Always Sunny and being good television, I mean, like, that's very Philly. The fact that the Eagles actually won the Super Bowl and they got to do an episode about that featuring Jason Kelce, that's cool and all. But like, I mean, the Eagles losing the game and, you know, you've got some ref shenanigans involved there. There's a lot of potential. They obviously did the whole D pink eye bit and, you know, Tom Brady and everything like that in the first one. It was a two parter. I mean, like,
yeah,
the potential for that, you know, is excellent. You've got the, you know, I don't know if they have the cachet to pull on Patrick Mahomes, top 100 most influential person in the world. I'm sure that they do not. But, you know, I'm sure, like, I mean, they probably could get Jason to come back on. They probably could get, you know, Trav to pop on there, right? Like, the cameo potential, I think, is really strong. I just, that is an episode that I would love to see. And I hope that I get to see.
You will, because I am now going to read you that plot outline for that exact show. Title. The gang loses the Super Bowl. Teaser. When the Philadelphia Eagles make it to Super Bowl 57, the gang heads to the game with hopes of a victorious celebration. However, their plans go awry as they cross paths with NFL stars Travis and Jason Kelce, ultimately leading to a chaotic and unforgettable Super Bowl experience. Act 1. The gang gathers at Paddy's to watch the Eagles secure their spot in Super Bowl 57. They decide to attend the game in person, pooling their money to buy tickets. Dennis and Charlie concoct a plan to make money by selling bootleg Eagles merchandise outside the stadium. Mac and Dee prepare an elaborate tailgate party to impress fellow Eagles fans. Upon arriving at the Super Bowl, the gang spots Travis and Jason Kelce. Frank hatches a plan to get close to them, hoping to leverage their fame for personal gain. Act 2. Dennis and Charlie set up their merchandise stand, but their knockoff products attract the attention of stadium security. They escape narrowly, leaving their goods behind. Mac and Dee's tailgate party spirals out of control when they accidentally serve spiked food and drinks, leading to chaos among Eagles fans. Frank manages to befriend the Kelce brothers by pretending to be a wealthy entrepreneur. He convinces them to join the gang's tailgate party, promising a memorable Super Bowl experience. Act 3. Travis and Jason Kelce arrive at the disastrous tailgate party where they are quickly recognized. Overwhelmed by the rowdy crowd and the chaos, the brothers try to leave. Frank, desperate to keep the Kelces around, lies about having VIP access to the gang. The gang bands together to sneak into the VIP section using the brothers as cover. As the game reaches the final moments, the Eagles fall behind 38-35. In an attempt to cheer on the team, Charlie accidentally distracts the Chiefs kicker, giving the Eagles a chance to win. Act 4. The Eagles have an opportunity to win with a last-second field goal, but the kicker misses, and the gang blames Charlie for jinxing the game. Travis and Jason Kelce confront the gang, realizing Frank's lies and deceit. The brothers decide to teach the gang a lesson by having them thrown out of the stadium. Back at Paddy's Pub, the gang laments their failed Super Bowl adventure, but ultimately finds solace in the fact that they managed to attend the big game together.
Welcome in to It's Always Sunny in Chiefs Kingdom. I'm Austin. You can find me on Twitter at RealBirdLawyer. Here with me, as always, my co-host Taylor at Taylor_Witt. We're brought to you by ChatGPT, apparently. From now on, they're going to be replacing us doing this podcast. The bots are coming.
They're here, buddy. They are here to stay.
Well, they haven't quite replaced us yet. We're brought to you by Underdog Fantasy, our personal sponsor. We're still free agents. We're still kicking around some ideas. We got some leads. We got some things in the works, some irons in the fire, as it were, but still independent for now. Brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. You can use our personal code Sunny, S-U-N-N-Y, to get a matching deposit up to your first $100. If you put $100, you get $100. That's $200. I'm telling you guys, the best time to draft on Underdog, personally for me, is right now, before the draft. Mm-hmm. Because if you feel like you have insider draft knowledge, and you don't, the draft is a crapshoot. We have no idea where any of these players are going to go. But if you think that you do, and if you're right, by some fluke of nature, I mean, you could draft somebody, you know, some sleeper that ends up getting drafted to the Chiefs. You know, like last year, Isaiah Pacheco, right? Mm-hmm. If you were like, I know Brett Veach, that dog, that dirty dog, he's going to draft Isaiah Pacheco in the 7th round, and that guy's going to be the starter like halfway through the season. I mean, you want a ton of money on Underdog Fantasy. Now, if you did that, you could probably make a ton of money speculating on other things as well. But I'm telling you, Underdog Fantasy is the way to go. Use our promo code SUNNY to get a matching deposit. It helps us keep the lights on, you know?
While you give the spin of like how to make money doing it, you know, which is great. For me, I've been drafting this month because I've been bored. It hasn't been because I'm over the draft. Definitely. It's because there's literally nothing going on. There's no fantasy football stuff. There's no real football stuff. The actual football is, I mean, so I've just been popping drafts left and right just because, like, what else is there to do?
Yeah, that's a really good point as well. It is a great way to staunch boredom. They have long drafts and they also have short drafts. So if you want to knock out a draft over your lunch break, you know, you pop into a room, you can instantly go in and draft. It takes about 10 minutes to get through the entire draft or on a 30-second timer. If you don't have that commitment, you can jump into one of the slow draft rooms and everybody's on like a 48-hour clock, but it'll send you a notification when it's your turn to pick. And as we get closer to the actual draft, it will sort of ratchet up, you know, the time constraints. So it'll kind of start putting people on the clock a little bit faster. It's really a great setup. Check them out. Underdog, S-U-N-N-Y. We got a great show for you guys today. We've got a little bit of news for the first time in a while. And then we're going to do a thing that we couldn't really come up with a great name for. It's really us doing selects. You're going to listen to our selects. But what we're really going to do is we're going to go through the roster and be Brett Veach for a night. And we're going to just kind of go through position by position on the current roster with the draft a couple of weeks out and kind of let you guys know what we would do if we were in the GM chair, whether that, you know, is signing players in free agency, you know, targeting certain guys in the draft. So we're going to do that. It's going to be fun. Let's get into the news. So Chiefs made a move. Big splash. They signed a wide receiver. Richie freaking James, baby. Let's go.
I will be honest with you. So he played in San Francisco before last year with the Giants. And for the longest time, I did not know that Richie James and Jeff Wilson were different people. And so
they don't even play the same position.
They don't. Jeff Wilson's a running back. So honestly, 2 years ago when Jeff Wilson was running, I was like, oh, they moved that guy to running back. He was a wide receiver for a little bit. I was like talking like I knew, you know, like, oh yeah, Jeff Wilson. They got him originally as a wide receiver. No, that was Richie James. I had no idea they were different guys. They're different dudes, actually.
Same dude, right? No. No. But they are both dudes, and Richie James is now a dude that plays for the Chiefs. As you mentioned, he was a Giant last year, and he set career highs in every category. He doubled his previous career high in targets. He got 35 3 years ago. He missed the 2021 season, but in 2020 had 35 targets and 394 yards with the 49ers. And then last year with the Giants in what was almost certainly the worst wide receiver room in the NFL, he got 70 targets, 569 yards, and 4 touchdowns. And, you know, this is a guy who came into the league as an undrafted free agent. He He's got a little bit of juice, a little bit of pop. You know, he's got enough speed and enough burst. The Chiefs have talked about putting him, you know, on return duty. I don't know. I mean, he's an interesting piece. Obviously, we were hoping for something flashier, something sexier. And, you know, this is the kind of signing that we can't even say definitively here as we sit now in mid-April that he's going to even make the team. We don't know.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting piece. And I don't know. I guess it's nice just to see the Chiefs do something.
It is nice. I mean, it's always nice when they add talent. I do think that he suffers narratively from, you know, just the timing of his signing. If this had been a late offseason signing or even a signing after the Chiefs made a big splash, brought in somebody that, you know, mattered, honestly, then like, I think everyone would just be like, oh, neat, or, you know, like whatever, or not even. But now it's like, oh, Richie James. Oh, there we go. You know, just like everyone's kind of talking shit. And like, you know, he doesn't deserve that. He's just a dude trying to make a roster somewhere. He's a 28-year-old player. And, you know, it'll be fine. We might never hear from him again, or he might come in and surprise some people and make some big, you know, he might be just more of like a Justin Watson type of role where just kind of a random free agent signing that makes random plays and, you know, it'll be what it is. But yeah, I think that he would have been better served timing wise if the Chiefs were a little bit more short up at wide receiver when they brought him in.
I'm sorry, I sold him short. He was a 7th round pick, not an undrafted free agent, but he does have a 6.0 relative athletic score. So, you know, slightly above average athlete. He scored above average in all of the speed and explosion categories. He scored very poor in the size category. He's 5'10", 183 is what he was listed at the combine when he was drafted.
Little Richie James.
Little Richie James. You know, honestly, he would tower over some of the guys in this draft class. We'll talk about that in our final segment. So, you know, maybe not so little after all, but it is interesting that the Chiefs have added, like, I mean, we thought maybe after the draft last year, and I'm including in that Justin Ross, who we'll also be discussing later, spoiler alert,
constantly,
that maybe that the Chiefs were going in, you know, direction of having a bigger wide receiver room because they signed Marquez Valdes-Scantling, who's tall, but they kind of,
and Juju.
I mean, yeah, Juju, that's true. And Juju was good sized, but since that time, they've kind of gone back to a bunch of tiny twinks. And it's an interesting wide receiver roster building strategy. Speaking of news, a little bit of tidbits coming out this week about some of the other things the Chiefs have been dipping their toes into. One of those, obviously, is a potential extension for Chris Jones, who has a year left on his deal. According to Albert Breer, the Chiefs are essentially backburnering conversations about an extension with Chris Jones until after the draft. They just want to kind of see where things land after the draft. To me, this reporting suggested that it's still very likely to happen. I didn't read this to mean that, you know, it's not going to happen. They're going to trade him. He's going to sit out, whatever. It doesn't sound like there's any bad blood. And remember, we've gone through this once with Chris Jones, and it was very clear the last time that we went through this with Chris Jones, there was bad blood. Mm-hmm. And I haven't gotten those same vibes. He obviously just tweeted a couple of weeks ago, you know, Chief for Life and all that kind of stuff. But it sounds like we may not get any news on that until maybe June, July. And it's interesting to me because I mean, on the one hand, I get it. On the other hand, price is just going to continue to go up. It's not going down. You know, obviously there's been a couple of players, Jeffrey Simmons being the latest one with the Titans, to swoop in and sign contract extensions. And that's driving up the price for Chris Jones. And it is what it is. But were you surprised by that at all?
I'm not super surprised that Chris and the team aren't feeling the heat to get the extension done. I think at the end of the day, the main difference between this negotiation period with him and the last one is that the team's won 2 Super Bowls since then. And Chris is like, I mean, you said there wasn't any bad blood. I think it's about as good a blood between a player on a contract, you know, like in a contract discussion and the team that there is in the NFL. I think Chris Jones wants to be buried at the 50-yard line. And I think that the team knows that whatever happens this offseason, even if it means no deal gets done, that they're still in good spot with Chris and they're still in a good spot to keep him long-term. I don't see that being at risk. I don't see anything here other than Chris Jones retiring as a Chief in hopefully 6 years from now. But yeah, he's in good shape. They're in good shape. I'm not surprised by this at all.
I think it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. We'll just put it that way. Another interesting development. We obviously were driving the Odell Beckham Jr. hype train on this podcast for, I don't know, it felt like months, years, really. That came to an end, shocking end last week when Odell Beckham Jr. signed a contract with the Ravens. Now, I say shocking. The destination was not incredibly shocking. The team that signed him and the fact that Odell was willing to go there, not incredibly shocking. What was shocking was that they paid him a 1 year deal up to $18 million. And when you hear up to, you think, all right, well,
half
so that's, yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. Like, he's got a ton of incentives in there, whatever. But no, $15 million of that's guaranteed. So he's essentially getting, he's guaranteed 1 year, $15 million. This is a guy who's 31, who's coming off his second major knee surgery, who hasn't played in, I mean, over a year because he got hurt in the 2022 Super Bowl. So I don't know. I mean, the Chiefs were interested, but not at the amount the Ravens paid him. And for that, I do not blame them at all.
No, I don't blame the Chiefs one bit. And in fact, I think Chiefs Kingdom would be pretty, pretty pissed right now if they were paying him that much money. It would mean that other guys that are, you know, earmarked for that money wouldn't be getting it, all that stuff. Now, the other thing about Odell, last time we saw him when he was very effective, he was catching passes from Matthew Stafford, a Super Bowl winning, very capable, big armed quarterback for the Rams. I don't know if Odell realizes what he's getting himself into here in Baltimore.
Sure. How could he? The Ravens don't know.
The Ravens don't know. And it's either going to be Lamar. And now, you know, the Instagram videos of Lamar and Odell spending time in Miami after this signing and all the stuff. I mean, it does suggest that Lamar projects himself to be a Raven next year, regardless of if the contract works or if he is or not. But I mean, even if it is Lamar, like, I just don't know if wide receiver hookup Lamar Jackson, like, I just don't know if that's going to work. I don't know if that formula is one that Odell's going to go out there for 1 year and bet on himself to go have a big year to then go probably sign the last contract of his career the following year. It just feels to me like the $15 million was his way of being like, all right, I probably don't have much left in the tank. This is probably my biggest money grab here. I'm going to grab $15 million in 2023 and probably not find a team in 2024 because I'm not going to look very good. That's just my, I don't predict this to go very, very well. Whereas I think that if Odell had come to a team like the Chiefs and been a number one for a quarterback like Mahomes, like, I think he could have parlayed that into a nice little payday for the 2024 offseason. I don't see that anymore.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to get offered $15 million at his age coming off his injury, you know, I mean, he probably didn't think that he was going to get that necessarily over his next two contracts. So, you know, it's kind of just he can go out and show what he still has left. We don't know if it's going to be, we don't know what it's going to be. We don't know what we're going to see from Lamar Jackson in 2023, but with the Ravens, it may not be much, even if he's healthy and he's productive. I mean, we saw like peak Odell back when he was still the same guy that he was in New York with Baker Mayfield in Cleveland, and it just it didn't work at all. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. In other news, Patrick Mahomes named one of Time's 100 most influential people for the year. I'm just going to read you the quick little excerpt written by none other than Peyton Manning for Time. Patrick Mahomes once served as a counselor at the Manning Passing Academy, a summer football camp for high school players that my dad founded in 1996, which, by the way, was the year Patrick Mahomes was born. You can learn a lot about a person by the way they treat eighth graders and ninth graders during those hot days in Louisiana. Patrick was great with the kids. I remember his arm strength back then. It jumped out at you. This February, at just 27, Patrick won his second Super Bowl MVP award. That arm strength still jumps out at you today. Patrick is setting new bars. All these young players around the country are trying to imitate his sidearm throws and incredible plays. But I hope they know he's also an incredibly hard worker. He appreciates the cerebral part of the game, and he understands his platform as the MVP quarterback of the Super Bowl winning team. This won't be the last time you hear Patrick Mahomes identified that way.
That's pretty sexy. You know, as good as he is on the field, probably almost definitely the best all time, the reason that he's on this list is his off the field persona. That's why he's a time 100 influential people and not just number one on the NFL top 100 or sure. anything sports right. related. I mean, this is about people that not only are good at what they do, but they impact a lot of people. And 15 of the Mahomes and all the stuff that he's done just with the community and with all of his programs that he does and charities. He's just constantly looking out for other people and trying to help other people. And, you know, it's wild. We always marvel at how it's crazy that he's our quarterback and that, you know, we are the ones who get to cheer for Patrick Mahomes every Sunday. But the off field stuff is so impressive. His persona and demeanor and all that stuff is, I mean, I don't know if I would say it's as good as his on field persona, but it's pretty damn close. He's an incredible person and we're just so lucky.
I did see that Elon Musk also made this list. So, you know, I mean, you take the bad with the good, but yes, I agree that Patrick Mahomes would not be on this list, but for doing amazing, incredible things, both on the football field and off it, Elon Musk is on it because he's influential, but, you know, maybe not in a positive way all the time. So before we get kicked off of his website, hopefully he doesn't right. listen to the podcast because that would be a disaster for us. Let's go on into our next segment, which is playing GM. We'll come up with a better title.
Our selects.
So what we're going to do is, again, it's 2 weeks out from the draft. We're going to play GM for a night. We have options at each position. We have selects at each position. So our options are, we can stand pat. We can kind of say we're good with what we have. We can make a trade for a player. We can sign a free agent, or we can draft the player. And we do have the Chiefs draft picks. So the Chiefs, for those of you who don't know, and I'm sure that you've heard this dozens of times, especially you guys that are out there just crushing the mock drafts. Round one, pick 31. Round two, pick 63. Round three, pick 95. Two fourth round picks at 122 and 134. In the fifth, picking at 166. Two sixth, 178 and 217, and 2 7ths back to back, 249 and 250. So if we're going to draft to supplement a team, we're not going to, we'll talk some specific players that we kind of have our eyes on, but really more about giving, you know, a general outline, like a, you know, first, second round pick versus a third, fourth, fifth round pick versus, you know, sixth, seventh round flyer kind of guy. That all sound good?
Yeah, sounds great. Can't wait.
All right. Let's dive into it. So we're going to start with wide receiver, the most controversial position on the 2023 Chiefs roster. So here are the guys that the Chiefs currently have under contract for 2023. Marquez Valdes-Scantling.
Marquez. He's going to kill you if he ever hears Marquez.
Okay. Marquez. Thank you for correcting me, though. I appreciate that. Marquez Valdes-Scantling. Kadarius Toney. Sky Moore. I feel like those are your projected starters. Now, here's the other guys on the depth chart that we have to choose
one from. Especially.
Yeah, right. Amir Smith-Marset, Cornell Powell, Richie James, recently signed, Jerrion Ealy, Ty Freifogel, John Ross, mm-hmm. and last but certainly not least,
say it,
Justin Ross.
Boom.
So I'm going to let you start off here. I'll be honest with you before I kick it over to you. When I read this list, I don't know if it's because we got Justin Ross hype videos on Twitter this week and we had quotes from Patrick Mahomes hyping him up. I don't know. I mean, like, it's not great, but it's not terrible.
It's not as bad as you were prepared to say it was originally.
No, it's not as bad. You know, the idea that Justin Ross could be anything at all, like, transforms this from total dog shit to, okay, all right, sure.
I think the issue is really just that these players all have very low floors. They have high ceilings, certainly. I mean, all three starters do, and sure. Justin Ross does. I mean, you can imagine a scenario where that room works out pretty well. And, you know, guys take steps forward and stay healthy. And, you know, we saw a flash of Marquez in the AFC Championship game. Like, if he was like a wide receiver one, like that game he was, and if he had performances like that consistently next year, I mean, he could level up as a player. And that's really not something that anybody saw coming when he walked into Kansas City. And, you know, obviously we're talking about Kadarius Toney. We're talking about a guy that is as athletically gifted and pops off the page anybody this side of Tyreek Hill. Like, he is a lot of fun, but we've also seen him fall apart, and we've seen it in New York, and we've seen it in Kansas City. So, you know, low floor, high ceiling there. Sky is a guy that we just don't know yet. He's still too young. He's shown flashes, but was last year rookie growing pains, or was last year because he wasn't very good? Like, it's just kind of hard to figure out, but
especially given that he, you know, came from a smaller college, and it just is, you expect him to have a longer developmental curve, but you also is he developing, or has he developed? Has he
exactly right. So you've got those guys, you've got a lot of young talent there and guys that could be good, but also as a team that is Super Bowl, that has Super Bowl aspirations every time because of 15, you just can't really bank on guys that all could have low floors, because if they all hit those low floors, I mean, Patrick Mahomes is amazing, but I don't know how much trust the GM is just saying, Brett's just saying, I don't really care who's out there with Patrick. He's going to make it work. He made it work last year. He'll make it work next year. Like, there's so much of that, like, pressure on Mahomes that I would love to relieve some of that pressure. And so relieving pressure involves getting a high floor receiver. That's a guy that relieves pressure, a guy that even if things aren't going right, you kind of know what he's going to bring, you know what kind of, you know, what impact you have there, what potential. And so to me, that's two profiles. That's either DeAndre Hopkins or a first round wide receiver. And yeah, a first round wide receiver isn't guaranteed to have a high floor, but it's pretty damn likely. I mean, it's those guys are, especially at the top of the draft, are very, very talented. And I would love to see the Cardinals cut DeAndre Hopkins and the Chiefs to bring him in just for money and not for draft picks, because that would obviously be the best of both worlds. They obviously could make the money work, and then that way they could still use all these draft picks on young guys. So in an ideal scenario for me, I'm waiting for the Cardinals to cut Nook, and then I'm not letting him leave Kansas City. I'm bringing him in for a visit, and I'm convincing him that if he wants to win a Super Bowl, this is the only place he needs to sign. And, you know, hopefully that does it. Hopefully he wants to go win. And he's said some stuff kind of in the past about, like, Mahomes different on Twitter and, like, just different. You know, I think that he's aware. He was in that 24-0 Houston playoff game that we both attended, that Texans were up and the Chiefs did their Chiefs thing. So, you know, I certainly think that Nook would be interested, and the Chiefs have been on his short list. But if they can't get that done, or maybe even if they can and they still want to go in this direction, I would love a first round draft pick on Quentin Johnston. And not only because he's got a, you know, pretty athletic profile, but I would love for them to invest highly in the draft in a wide receiver. I just think that that's the position of need the most right now. And Quentin Johnston is a dude. He played at TCU, as a lot of you listening that are either K-State or KU fans have watched him cut people up this year. And he just is the type of profile. He's 6'2", 208, you know, runs a 4.5 40. So he's certainly fast enough. And if he's sitting there, he's not projected to go, you know, at the top of the wide receiver room, but he's decently close to it, to where you'd be at the, he's the, like, wide receiver 5 by Dane Brugler. And so, you know, you figure picking 31, you're probably around that range right there. And the Chiefs certainly know what he can bring to the table. So I would love for them to either or both wait for Nook to get cut and sign him, or draft Quentin Johnston the 31st overall.
I had those two as my top choices as well. Trading for DeAndre Hopkins and investing a high pick in wide receiver. To me, you know, and the Chiefs clearly do not necessarily agree with this. Although last year when they had two first round picks, they traded up for a cornerback and they took an edge rusher, which are both premium positions. But the Chiefs have not drafted a first round wide receiver since, they certainly have not done it since Brett Veach has been the GM, but they didn't do it with John Dorsey. That wasn't a Dorsey pick, was it?
No,
that
was, but it was the last.
Last Chiefs first round wide receiver, surely, right?
I can't think of anybody that. Yeah.
So I agree with you. I mean, like, I think that the, so the, we're going to do offensive line next, so I'll go ahead and tee this up as well. But I think wide receiver and offensive line are two positions on the offense that, and especially in this offense, the Andy Reid offense, that you really get a big benefit from continuity. And the way that you get continuity is by drafting premium players with premium picks.
Mm-hmm.
Because a first round pick gives you the fifth year option. You don't have to even begin where you literally can't even talk contract extension with these players until after their third season. And so you've got at least 3 years in the system before you even can consider negotiating an extension with the player. You know, you've got cost control, you've got an extra year of team control, and, you know, continuity on the offensive line, just being able to play with the guy next to you and knowing the scheme. But with wide receiver in this system, we know that it takes some time to learn. Now, a veteran like Juju Smith-Schuster was able to come in and perform really pretty admirably with, you know, one offseason to kind of learn the playbook. But he's sure. Also, you know, a guy that's been in the league somehow for like 6 years.
Yeah.
So I agree that I think you're getting, if you're investing a high draft pick in a wide receiver, like I think what you're getting out of that, assuming that you don't draft a dud, and, you know, that's always a danger. But like you said, wide receiver's been pretty safe in the first round the last, you know, 4 or 5 years, because there's so much tape on these guys now. They come into the league so much more pro ready than wide receivers used to be.
Yeah.
Obviously, the dream would be somebody like Jaxon Smith-Njigba, who is Dane Brugler's wide receiver one. I mean, like, he's kind of the consensus wide receiver one in this class. A little bit smaller and not a guy that has a ton of long speed, but he's just so smooth and so polished. I mean, like, he is a high four player. If there was some way for the Chiefs to get their hands on Jaxon Smith-Njigba, which I don't think that there's going to be, but right. If there was some way for them to get their hands on him, that's a guy that immediately, like, that is your, I mean, I would pencil him in for, you know, 70 catches as a rookie easily.
Yeah.
I had Quentin Johnston as my other pick as well. And these are both players that the Chiefs reportedly do have interest in, along with Jalin Hyatt, Zay Flowers, and Rashee Rice, who are all in Dane Brugler's top 11 at mm-hmm. wide receiver. I mean, these are all guys that Rashee White, Rice, not so much, but, you know, Jalin Hyatt, and he's probably, Jalin Hyatt's maybe more of a very late first if he goes in the first round. But, you know, Smith-Njigba, Quentin Johnston, Zay Flowers, I would expect those guys to probably all be first round picks, although, you know, one or two of those guys may slip to the end of the first round, maybe within striking distance of the Chiefs want to trade up. I think for me, this wide receiver room is fine as is, but I think I agree with you. I think you either add a high floor player. If you can't add a high floor player in the draft, a long-term answer that you're going to get the continuity bump from, then go trade for DeAndre Hopkins and go win another ring or two in his sure. yeah. remaining, you know, effective seasons in the NFL. So let's
can
go.
I name one yeah. guy in down sure. yeah. later down the board? Brewer's got him as wide receiver 16. I loved watching him play at Iowa State, and that's Xavier Hutchinson. He seemed, most of the time when I watched him, it was like he was the only man out there among boys. I mean, just really, really knew how to take over a game. And even though you knew that Iowa State was thrown to Xavier Hutchinson, they didn't have very good quarterback play. It was kind of reminds me of like DeAndre Hopkins with the old Texans, where even when sure. they had bad quarterbacks and even when he was the only guy there, he still just, you just couldn't stop him. And I felt like that was a lot of tape from Xavier Hutchinson. So he's more of a fourth round projection. So not really a guy that I think would come in and, you know, immediately impact anything, but the Chiefs are sitting there with 2/4 and a 5th round pick. And I would love if they used one of those middle on to kind of beef up the wide receiver room a little bit and go grab Hutchinson.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, like, obviously the Chiefs have a lot of mid and late round picks, so they certainly could add to the wide receiver room. And that's been something that they have done pretty consistently in the, you know, Andy Reid era is, yeah. you know, throw mid-round picks at your DeMarcus Robinsons and your Chris Conleys and Byron yeah. Pringles. And sure, I don't have any issue with that at all. They have the numbers of picks to be able to attack that, you know, just with a mid-round or a late-round pick, and I wouldn't have any problem with that at all. Switching over to offensive line, I mean, again, just kind of teeing this up, I think this is one of the two positions that the Chiefs really get a lot of benefit from having long-term answers at those positions. And you saw it, you know, with their their dialogue and, you know, their signing of Juwan Taylor this offseason is that they really wanted a long-term solution. They didn't view Orlando Brown Jr. as that solution. So they brought in Juwan Taylor, and hopefully they're right about that. They're obviously, the plan is to move him from right to left tackle. But I think this is another position where I would be very comfortable with, assuming the Chiefs have a player that they like, investing a high pick and a tackle at the end of the first round. And, you know, the Chiefs were lucky that they hit on Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith in the same draft. And both of those guys immediately, like, they were both immediate starters. We talked, I remember on this podcast when, you know, the rumblings were first starting with Trey Smith about him starting, like, a rarity for a sixth round pick to come in as a rookie and start every game at right guard. But, you know, Creed and Trey Smith both getting, you know, drafted in the same draft, that was huge for the Chiefs. But, you know, those guys are two seasons in now. They have two seasons of team control left. Chiefs will have to start thinking about contract extensions for each of them after next year. I think you really get a lot of benefit out of finding a tackle, whether it's going to be a left tackle or right tackle. And Dane Brugler has six tackles with a first or second round grade. If one of those six guys falls to the end of the first round, obviously, yes. If the Chiefs have another guy that they like in that second, third round, you know, just athletically that they think they can mold, Andy Heck can coach up, I think that's the direction I probably would go. But obviously the Chiefs only have one first round pick, one second round pick, one third round pick. So you have you know, we just talked about, you know, signing a wide receiver or drafting a wide receiver high. You can't spend a first round pick. You can't spend one first round pick on a tackle and a wide receiver, Taylor.
No,
you only have one pick.
Especially if you want to trade one of those first rounders for Nook or something. I mean,
sure, right, exactly. Or a second or a third. Yeah. But I think the other option is to go dip your toe into the free agency pool. And I think, you know, like wide receiver, I guess I didn't read off who the Chiefs have on the roster, you know, left to right, Juwan Taylor, Joe Tooney, Creed Humphrey, Trey Smith, Lucas Niang, and the backup players they have under contract, Prince Seguinogo, Nick Allegretti, Austin Ryder, Mike Caliendo, and Darian Kennard. I'm fine with that room. And I think unlike the wide receiver room, I mean, the starters are rock solid with the exception of the tackles, but you've got aiding your tackles, the best left guard, the best center, and the best right guard in the NFL. I mean, certainly as a unit, left guard to right
best
guard,
interior,
Chiefs are, it's the best interior offensive line in the NFL. It's not even close, I don't think.
Well, especially since Seumalo left Philly. I mean, that were unbelievable up front.
They were beasts, and they still will be very good. Obviously, Jason's getting a little long in the tooth, but But I think the other way you could go with this is dip your toe into the free agent pool. You could sign somebody like Taylor Lewan, or even like an Eric Fisher, right? Like not somebody that's going to be a long-term solution, but there are some veteran tackles out there that even Mike Remmers, which I know we all have PTSD from watching Mike Remmers in the Tampa Super Bowl, but, you know, a guy that is capable and theoretically could come in and just like a DeAndre Hopkins type, theoretically give you 1 to 2 years of solid production. Certainly not somebody that you would expect to have quite the same floor as a DeAndre Hopkins or even the same ceiling, but I think those are the two directions you could go there. My preference would probably be to invest in the draft, because I think getting a long-term solution to tackle would really behoove the Chiefs. But where would you like to go with this one?
Yeah. First of all, I had pretty good memories of Mike Remmers as a Chief. I know that it ended poorly, but that was not really on him. He was thrust into a bad situation, and he also played poorly in his Super Bowl appearance with Carolina before he joined the Chiefs. I mean, yeah, the Super Bowl hasn't been kind to Mike Remmers, but other than that, I always felt like he was a decent fill-in. I never was tearing my hair out like I was with some of the other players. So that would be a fine, just kind of a body in there, a free agent. He kind of knows the building and knows some of the coaches and stuff like that. Like, I mean, you know, I always like a little reunion with guys coming back a couple years later. Like, I just think it's fun, and I'm sure the guys like the familiarity. I certainly would like to draft a guy that you could play at either left tackle or right tackle, a guy that has a little bit of versatility to him. Just kind of based on where those two tackle spots are at. Obviously, we would love for everything to work out with Juwan Taylor and nobody else to play left tackle for 5 years other than him in a Chiefs uniform, but you just can't really, you can't count on it yet. And the right tackle situation with Lucas Niang is kind of the same thing, where, like, I know the team loves him. I know that Andy Reid speaks really highly of Lucas Niang, and that their plan, if it worked to perfection, would be for Lucas Niang to be the starter next year and play every game. But I just haven't seen it enough with either of those tackles to be super comfortable. So there's a tackle from Oklahoma, Wanye Morris, who's 6'5", 307. He played at both Tennessee and Oklahoma. He was a left tackle at Tennessee. He was an All-American as a freshman. And then when he moved to Oklahoma, he was a backup left tackle his first year and then started at right tackle his second year and played really, really well. And so he's kind of got that versatility. He's got that big game. You know, he played in both the SEC and the Big 12. So he certainly is not a stranger to big time football. And just another guy. I think Creed must know him if he played in 21 at Oklahoma, I believe. So, you know, maybe a little familiarity there with Creed Humphrey, but just in general, a guy to come in, a big body, a guy that's played both positions, and just something. He'd be like a fourth, fifth round pick. You know, you're not going to spend a ton of capital on him, but I think a guy like that might work out pretty well.
Yeah, I think this is another position where I mentioned Dane Brugler, for one, had six players with a first or second round grade. You know, you mentioned Wanye Morris is a fourth, fifth round projection, and he's right above the guy that I was going to throw out there, Blake Freeland, who is number one, a BYU player. We know the Chiefs love players from BYU, Andy's alma mater, and of course the alma mater of Dirty Dan Sorensen. You know, former Chiefs great. But Blake Freeland is an interesting player because Dane's got him with a fifth round grade, but the guy's 6'7", and his relative athletic score was a 9.82.
Oh,
he's on the lighter side, so his weight was in the 31st percentile, but his height 95th percentile, and his testing numbers were insane. So I believe he set the record for the vertical jump in the tackle, 37 inches. 99. We would get 99.8 percentile. So I guess maybe he was one player off, but 99th percentile in the 10-yard split on his 40-yard dash. He ran a 4.9840,
and under 5:40 for a 6'7".
Yeah, for a 6'7" tackle with those 34-inch arms. So, you know, I could see the Chiefs maybe taking a flyer on a mid-round prospect, and I did see. I forget who put it out, but somebody put out an amazing chart a couple of weeks ago that asked the rhetorical question, which was answered by the chart in the affirmative: is Brett Veach's superpower drafting offensive linemen? And I mean, if you think about it, Brett Veach has been insane at drafting offensive linemen. Like every offensive lineman Brett Veach has ever drafted has been just an absolute freaking stud. So, you know, if the Chiefs wanted to dip their toes into the fourth, fifth round pick pool with the tackle, I wouldn't mind that. But I would like to see a significant investment made at offensive line in the draft. And obviously, when I say offensive line, I mean left to right tackle, because as we discussed,
yes,
that interior
needs, is stout.
It needs no help. Let's go to tight end. And this is an interesting one because I heard Charles Robinson on Yahoo say the other day that the GMs he's talked to around the league project 8 NFL starters from this draft class, which is it to say 8 stars, but I mean, you're talking about 8 starters at a position like tight end when, you know, not every team even necessarily starts a tight end. I mean, that's like a third of the league.
I wonder if he said that because all the tight ends suck. In the league.
And they actually do. It's funny because Charles did mention that was maybe why, you know, that may factor into it as well, that it's a weak position. But I mean, just looking at looking at Dane Brugler's rankings, he's got 9 guys with a top 3 round grade, which is crazy. I mean, like, just looking at generally how NFL teams grade prospects, you know, you get through the third round, you expect guys in the top 3 rounds, top 100 picks, to be starters, whether they're going to be Pro Bowlers or not, you know, or future Hall of Famers, maybe not, but at least a guy that's going to start and give you significant snaps. And, you know, he's got 9 guys graded in there. So for me, I think this is a position group that I feel pretty comfortable with. Chiefs have obviously Travis Kelce, Noah Gray, Jody Fortson, Blake Bell, and then Kendall Blanton and Matt Bushman under contract at this tight end position. But this is a position where I think I'd be comfortable with the Chiefs investing probably not their first round pick, but really anywhere from the second to fifth round, I would be comfortable with the Chiefs taking one of these guys that they like. And that's where I would probably like to see them go.
How would you like Georgia's Darnell Washington?
I would love
a monster.
Yeah,
he ran a 4.64. I mean, he's
but I think you have to invest probably, I don't know if he makes 31. So this is the interesting. This is the interesting thing for me is whether, and I think this is a, I think teams probably have different philosophies on this, and I'm not sure where the Chiefs land on this, but this is an interesting question, right? Like, does a class being super deep at a particular position, does that mean that teams are willing to wait, or does it mean that it actually pushes everybody up? Because it's like, all right, we've got all these good tight ends. I'm going to go get, you know, one of these guys at the end of the first round, top of the second round, or does it, you know, push them all down half a round or a round from where they would maybe go in a draft where the position is a little bit thinner and scarcer? And I just don't know that we have a way to evaluate that. I mean,
yeah, the GMs are kind of playing chicken with each other there.
Sure,
they're kind of saying, you know, yeah, there's six tight ends that I would love to have, so I'm going to wait around and probably still have one or two of them on the board when I come back and pick again. But you're running the risk of course, all there being a run. The runs are always
the runs.
Position it's, runs are
it's killing. No different from a fantasy draft. I mean, like, you see it if you've ever done a fantasy football draft, you know that you know, like, people like to wait on quarterbacks in fantasy, like, if you're not a total scrub and a total noob. But once one person takes quarterback, especially if you're broken. Especially in a more casual league, it's like, oh, well, he took a quarterback. Now I need to get my quarterback, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if I don't take one now, they're going to be gone in a couple of rounds. So I need to make sure that I go get him. And so, you know, the Chiefs are in an interesting position because they're at the end of the first round. You wouldn't expect tight end to be a position, even with this being a deep tight end class, that there's necessarily going to be a big run on tight ends, but maybe. I think this is a room where I'm pretty comfortable with the Chiefs, with what the Chiefs have right now. But I could certainly see them adding in the draft, and I hope they do draft someone kind of anywhere from the second to like the fifth round. I'd be pretty comfortable with the Chiefs doing that.
If you heard Brett Veach say that the plan behind the scenes is for Noah Gray to be the heir apparent to Travis Kelce, would you be on board with that plan?
I mean, it's tough because there's no such thing as an heir apparent to Travis Kelce, and he's not. Noah Gray's, you know, 6'2", and Travis is what, 6'4".
He's
I mean, he's bigger, and Noah Gray doesn't have the same athletic profile, but I like Noah Gray, and I think he's going to be a good player. As a Travis Kelce light, I'd be fine with it, but I would prefer to have him be my tight end too. I think he'd be a killer kick-ass tight end too.
Gotcha. What should we do about quarterback?
Let's wait on quarterback. Let's do running back. Running back. Okay. The running back room: Isaiah Pacheco, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and LaMichael Perine. We got to save quarterback for the last on offense because it's such a
copied these positions, I had quarterback before running back, but I see you swapped them.
Swapped them because it made more sense to me to put quarterback.
Last, it does make more sense. I was going off old notes.
I know. It's completely fine. So running back, again, Pacheco, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, LaMichael Perine, those are the three. I think this is one where I would expect the Chiefs to co-sign Jerick McKinnon again.
Yeah.
You know, if he's still available late in free agency, I think we can go ahead and pencil him in to the to that roster spot again. But this is one where I'd like to see the Chiefs draft another player. And I mean, this is gonna sound trite, and it's clearly a little bit of local bias coming in. But man, I'd love to see Deuce Vaughn as a Chief.
Sure.
Dane Brugler has him with a fourth or fifth round grade, and I mean, obviously the guy's 5'5", 180, but you've got Isaiah Pacheco as your hammer. So why not get, you know, I mean, like, isn't Deuce Vaughn sort of the perfect complement to a back like Isaiah Pacheco?
Sure. I mean, I see them working really well together.
Yeah. I mean, like, Isaiah Pacheco is going to run hard and get you the tough yards. Deuce Vaughn's got, you know, some pop, and he can certainly do some of those things that, you know, former K-State legend Darren Sproles was famous for.
Deuce would be the Clyde that was promised.
Sure, exactly right. He would be Clyde, but in the right round. And unlike Clyde, I mean, he ran a 4.56, which isn't great, but I think if you watched Deuce Vaughn in the one moment that K-State fans want to remember from the Alabama game.
Oof, I mean, that long ass touchdown.
Yeah, he busted through the Alabama defense and took it to the house. And I mean, he's running away from guys that are going to play on Sundays in the league. So I'd like to see a mid-round investment. If not Deuce Vaughn, this is a deep running back class. And I think there's a lot of players that this is another one that the big whiff on Clyde in the first round, notwithstanding, that the Chiefs have had some good success with, in the later rounds. They've gotten some guys that can play, that can give them snaps. Pacheco being the obvious, home run pick in the seventh round. But I mean, that's kind of where I'd like to see them go. Obviously, this is not a position where you're going to go out and trade for a guy. But what did you have?
I think they could use a vet. And I think I was also assuming that McKinnon's going to be part of this room already. That basically, to me, the running back room is
sure. Pacheco. It includes
Jerick McKinnon already. And I just think they need kind of a bigger veteran presence, a guy that's been around the block. I just don't know if trusting the majority of your season on a seventh round pick at any position without a viable backup makes a lot of sense. And it doesn't mean that they don't have faith in him or that they don't like what he brings. I love Clyde. A couple of years too late on that one. I love Pacheco a lot. I think he's a lot of fun, and I think he's the exact type of guy you want to be a lead back in the NFL. But I would love for them to bring in just a guy that's been around the block that can kind of take him under his wing a little bit, kind of teach him the ropes, kind of, the first guy I thought of was Leonard Fournette. And Touchdown Lenny is a free agent right now and is a hammer. And he really does, he, even though he's older, when you're older, but you still are kind of a big body and can hit guys and stuff. I mean, Leonard Fournette has won games and been a big factor and was the second overall pick with the Jags. And I just think that he's the type of profile as a now very affordable, older veteran running back that I think he could teach a lot to Pacheco and potentially to whoever else they would add to that room. Maybe he can, give LaMichael Perine a lesson or two, but another guy that would kind of fit that mold, but I wouldn't be as excited about would be Zeke Elliott. I think that he probably has designs on New York or some type of other market or situation than the Chiefs, but I don't know. I mean, Zeke still has some gas left in the tank. He's not necessarily the Zeke Elliott that, was the star of the NFL for a bit, but I think he would be another guy that could come in and be a good, the Chiefs have done the older veteran running back with Le'Veon and Shady
Shady McCoy.
And Zeke basically fits that exact mold where I don't know if he would be super helpful.
Down to being a potential malcontent, I feel like. Yeah. But I feel like the same of Leonard Fournette potentially as well. I
mean, sure, Fournette dealt with some suspensions and stuff himself. I mean, he's and then, of course, the third running back that also fits all of these molds would be Kareem Hunt. I mean, and the Chiefs have had a history with Kareem Hunt, as we all know. But
three older, big name malcontents that could, they tried it with LeSean McCoy, they tried it with Le'Veon Bell, and maybe third time's a charm. Bring him in.
Sure, exactly. So I want a vet running back there.
That's completely fair. So we're getting now here to quarterback, and I just wrote for my notes, Stand Pat. Boom!
Stand Patrick.
We have, of course, Mahomes, Shane Buechele, and Chris Oladokun in the quarterback room right now. I guess it's maybe worth discussing briefly what the plan is at backup quarterback. I mean, they haven't signed anybody yet, so fire up your Shane Buechele's.
Well, and you would think if you plan on using a backup quarterback, you're in trouble, whatever. Sure, but think about the impact that Matt Moore and Chad Henne had on this team. Yeah. On championship runs, as big of an impact as backup quarterbacks have had in the NFL, those three games that those guys played.
Certainly could make the argument that, and I'm not saying that it's necessarily true, but I mean, the year that they lost to Tampa in the Super Bowl, they maybe don't make the Super Bowl if Chad Henne doesn't come in and give them that clutch performance, obviously, to win the game against Cleveland. And, you know, same. I mean, both of the games that Chad Henne had to come into the playoffs were one score games.
Yeah. So that they lost and won a Super Bowl in those two games or in those 2 years. And then Matt Moore obviously won a game in a year that the Chiefs won the Super Bowl in 19 and, you know, took over in Denver and won that game.
They got home field advantage.
And they got home field advantage. The one game mattered a lot. I mean, so
it did.
So, yes. So while you don't want to game plan to have to ever turn to a backup quarterback in the era of Patrick Mahomes, they've frankly turned to the backup quarterback a couple times and in big time moments, and it paid off, and the investment in those players paid off. So I don't know if I'm super thrilled about Shane Buechel or Chris Olatokun being the option there. I think I want I hate to say this, but like Carson Wentz, like would that be so bad for him to be the backup quarterback? Would that be so bad?
Maybe
it would.
I mean, what I'm concerned about with the backup quarterback is you don't want him to be an active detriment to the team, and you don't want him to be a malcontent. You want him to you want him to be a Chad Henne, you know, Matt Moore type that's going to be, you know, a solid presence in the room. Now, Carson Wentz, I'm worried, is verging on malcontent.
You think?
I don't know. I'm just speculating. But
I mean, has he ever been in trouble off the field or done any?
No, but
he just sucks.
Remember,
he just can't start.
Remember, though, he kind of threw a fit when Jalen Hurts took his job in Philly.
He did.
And they had throw him.
Good point.
They had to trade him away.
Good point.
Because he was kind of being a baby about that. And I worry about that a little bit. There are some veteran quarterbacks, though, that would intrigue me. I mean, Teddy Bridgewater.
Teddy Two Gloves. Love it.
Teddy Two Gloves is 30 years old. He's the same age as Carson Wentz somehow, which is kind of a little bit shocking to me.
It's a little weird. Two different career paths for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Even a guy like, I don't know, Mason Rudolph's terrible.
I would
Teddy Bridgewater. If I had to sign a veteran backup quarterback, I'd go the Teddy Bridgewater route. All right, let's pivot over to the other side of the ball here. We're going to start with edge on defense. And just to kind of give you an idea of who the Chiefs have here, we've got on the left side primarily George Karlaftis, Malik Herring, and Joshua Kando, who is still Chief for right now. And on the right side, Charles Omenihu and Mike Dana. Those are kind of your five. Now, the Chiefs obviously have a couple of guys that have some ability to pivot out to the edge. Chris Jones has played out there and been effective. Treshawn Wharton's done that occasionally. But this is clearly a position where the Chiefs need to add. And to me, this is like tackle and wide receiver. It's something where you don't necessarily need the continuity. I mean, you'd like to have a good player at those positions, but it's not like tackle or wide receiver where you would expect them maybe to take a little bit of time to get up to speed. If you get a good pass rusher, they can come in and contribute, you know, pretty much right away. We've seen it happen every year. The problem is you usually are going to have to draft those guys in the top half of the first round, and the Chiefs are obviously never going to be in position to pick in the top half of the first round. So this is one where I would certainly consider investing a high draft pick if a player dropped. And the hot buzz around the kingdom today was Keon White, and the Chiefs are interested in him. I'm a pass on that. I'm out. I don't think he's a bad player, but he's already 24, and he's not a guy you would expect to come in and contribute right away. And I'm not about it. If I'm going to draft a guy that's 24, he better be ready to go. Like, he better be a finished product. Because
And he played at Georgia Tech. Like, I don't like these guys that haven't played big time.
Sure,
you know, big time games. Like,
careers are short. Just don't. I mean, if you're going to invest in a guy, he better be a finished product at that age. It's too old. He's too old. Yep. So, but conversely, I think the place that the Chiefs have to really add in this room, if they didn't essentially trade up for an edge rusher, is just to go out and sign veteran free agents. Like, get a rotation going, right? There are a ton of decent, good and decent
warm bodies, veteran, good and decent
veteran pass rushers out there who could be a part of a rotation. Bud Dupree, Frank Clark, Jadeveon Clowney, Leonard Floyd, Justin Houston, Mark Ingram, Carlos Dunlap. You've got former Chiefs on that list. You've got
Robert Quinn, Yannick Ngakoue. I mean, they're everywhere.
Right. Sure. Exactly. I mean, you've got it. And they're all still available. So you could go out and sign two of those guys pretty easily, right?
Sure.
You know, Frank Clark and Carlos Dunlap. Two edges. Yeah. You know, Frank Clark and Carlos Dunlap obviously were Chiefs last year. I don't know that. It didn't seem like there was any bad blood with either of those guys. I don't know if Carlos Dunlap wants to keep playing.
Right.
I don't know where Frank's head is at, but like these are guys that are available, and the Chiefs have gotten good production out of these veteran edge rush players. Every time they've dipped their toe into that market, mm-hmm. it's worked out. I mean, mm-hmm. like when they picked up a couple of years ago in the Super Bowl, Terrell Suggs, when they picked him up.
Melvin Ingram
worked out great. Carlos Dunlap worked out great. I mean, every time they brought in one of those guys, like a veteran rotational piece, it's worked out. It's worked out pretty much every time. So I think that is probably the path that I would go if you don't have an edge fall to you kind of in that middle of the first round where you might be able to move up.
I think edges are pretty easy once they've played in the NFL. To get a little grip on what they have and what they'll bring to your team. I think it's hard to really swing and miss on a veteran.
I agree.
They've had a lot of tape and they still know what they're doing. And like when they fall off and then you send them packing. But like until they fall off, I just don't think that it's one of those positions where, oh, you got to have the right fit and you got to have the right, you know, bring them in, send them out for the quarterback. Right. Yeah, exactly. Right. So you're right. I think that group, I had many of those guys as potential warm bodies that the Chiefs could bring in. I think that, I mean, I feel like this is probably the sixth time this offseason I've said that Frank Clark would be great to come back if everything makes sense. But I mean, I do. I think that's a great fit for both sides. And I think he would be welcome back to here. And I think he would love to come back. A draft pick that would be kind of middle of the round that I just was looking, you know, they have all those fourths and all that stuff. And, there was a guy that I watched play several games this last fall that I always thought stood out, and that was KU Kansas edge Lonnie Phelps. He played his senior year at KU, had 7 sacks, was just really a senior leader for that team, and I always thought that he'd make a pretty solid pro, and he's kind of sitting there kind of right in that area where you're not like edge 23-ish, fourth, fifth round. So, you know, a mid-round guy that – I think would be a decent investment for the team. And if you're going to go kind of later and not really have to spend that premium draft pick on an edge, there are a lot of guys in that range, of that kind of mid round edge. That's a big enough body and they played, you know, high profile college football and they've got like enough reasons where you could see them working out that, I certainly would not mind. And I think they will, beefing up that room with just a couple draft picks as well.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, speaking of guys that, I mean, we kind of said you want a premier edge rusher that you know is going to hit, you kind of have to be picking in the top half of the first round. But, you know, staying local, I know a lot of guys like Felix, Kansas State, you know, he's projected.
And Udike Uzomah.
Yeah, and Udike Uzomah, exactly.
He's awesome.
You know, kind of projected to be maybe a late first, early second round pick. Chiefs are kind of picking in that range. I mean, I think, you know, he certainly is a player that, when you're looking for, you know, outside of the top half of the first round, a guy that gives you a lot of what you want to see. And that, I mean, just a lot of potential there to get a good player. So he certainly is another guy that that I wouldn't mind seeing the Chiefs take. Defensive interior. So this one, I mean, Chiefs are in pretty good shape here. I feel like Derek Nnadi, Chris Jones, obviously Sean Warden, Danny Shelton, Byron Cowart, Daniel Wise, Phil Hoskins.
Yeah,
those are apparently people that we also have in the roster. But I mean, essentially, Nnadi, Chris Jones, Treshawn Wharton, and whoever, Danny Shelton. You've got a good little pack of guys in there. And especially if the Chiefs are going to bring in, you know, the thing about these older edge rushers is that a lot of times, since they're, you know, as they become older men, they're relying on their old man strength and less on their speed to get around the edge. if that old man strength plays inside. I mean, we saw it with Carlos Dunlap. He played a lot of snaps inside last year. If they sign a guy like a Melvin Ingram or a Carlos Dunlap or a Justin Houston, you know, a Frank Clark, Leonard Floyd, all of those guys are guys that could play some defensive tackle and kind of move into the interior on certain downs and in certain fronts. So I think the Chiefs are in pretty good shape there. If I had to add somebody, my choice would be to dip into the free agency pool and see if 36-year-old Ndamukong Suh wants to win another Super Bowl ring. Or
36.
Yeah, it's crazy to me, even though I'm also 36 years old now. But
that's Shelby why it's Harris, crazy.
I know, it is. It is crazy. Shelby Harris is another one, former Bronco, former Seahawk. He's 31. You know, he's getting a little long in the tooth, but he's still got a little bit left. Wouldn't mind kicking the tires on him. But I think this is a position group where, I mean, Chris Jones, obviously, you know, when you have Chris Jones in a room, it's automatically going to be a good room. But I feel like the Chiefs are in pretty good shape on this one.
I agree. There was a name around like the third round, like that I would use pick 95 on, which was Baylor Siaki Ika. He was a lot of fun to watch in college, was a first team All Big 12 player, also played at LSU for 2 years. So much like Wanya Morris, you know, kind of has that Big 12 and SEC upbringing and has played in some, you know, gigantic games against pro players. And I mean, he's 6'2", 335. I kind of like bringing in a young guy with this room, because obviously if you've got Chris Jones and I mean, Danny Shelton in there, and you know, you've got some guys that Derek Nottie that could teach the young guys kind of how to be a pro. And I'd love to see them use kind of a not quite late pick, but like a day two pick on Siaki Ika. I think that'd be fun.
I think that's completely fair. So now we get to go to a pretty easy one that I think we're both going to have similar answers on. That's linebacker. Chiefs have Willie Gay, Nick Bolton, Drew Tranquil, Leo Chenal, and then they've got Jack Cochran and Cole Christensen rounding out that room. But that is a really solid top four. You know, the addition of Drew Tranquil, who is a guy that really has a lot of coverage skills to kind of duplicate and really, I mean, just based on what we've seen so far in their NFL careers, exceed what Willie Gay is doing as, you know, kind of the coverage linebacker. But obviously, Nick Bolton, Willie Gay, Drew Tranquil, Leo Chenal as your top four looks really good. And I think we forget sometimes that Leo Chenal is one of the most athletic linebacker prospects ever drafted in the history of the NFL.
Yeah.
And, you know, flash a little bit in the Super Bowl. I mean, this is a this is a freakish linebacker room. I mean, this has the potential to be one of the best linebacker rooms in the league.
I completely agree. Bolton and Gay are stars, and you know, Tranquil and Chenal are not that far behind. I mean, it is a solid room. If they do not add a single player to this, they'll be fine.
Let's rotate over here to cornerback, and this is one where the Chiefs obviously benefit hugely from really having attacked that cornerback room with numbers in last year's draft. Obviously getting Jalen Watson and Trent McDuffie were the big ones, but you know, Nazi Johnson and the other guys that they added to that
Williams
room
too.
Yeah, of course. So this is one where I think I would probably look to maybe add a free agent as a depth piece. There's a surprising number of decent cornerbacks out in free agency, and I do use the word decent somewhat loosely, but just to kind of throw some names out there for you, for the troll factor, Eli Apple's a free agent.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I know. I can't.
Literally never.
No, I know. I can't in good conscience welcome Eli Apple.
I mean, the Chiefs wouldn't do it.
I know. I don't think they would either. I don't think they would either. But there are some interesting names out there. To be serious, to be real, Rakusin, literally an interesting name. But he's only... Sure. He's only 26 years old and has some pedigree. And he was a guy who the Chiefs were, I mean, going all the way back to when he was drafted, were reportedly interested in. He ended up getting drafted by the Colts, who, you know, obviously have former Chiefs personnel guy, Chris Ballard, running the show there. Former Chief Marcus Peters is available.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's 30 years old. I know there is a certain portion of the fan base that would never welcome back Marcus Peters. And I suspect that the Chiefs front office and or ownership would have no interest in bringing back Marcus Peters. But for me personally, you know, why not?
I think he's the only guy that matters. I think if Andy said, Brett, go out and sign my guy, Marcus Peters, I think Brett would say, yes, sir, Andy, right away, and would go do it. I mean, there's really, and Clark, I don't know. I don't see them, you know, it was a rocky relationship, but it certainly wasn't as bad as it's ever been between a player and a team. It just was time to move on. And yeah, I think if Andy Welk wanted him back, he'd be back.
I mean, there was the whole, like, you know, getting ejected thing. He threw the flag. He threw the flag.
So did Travis Kelce.
There were some rumors about stuff going on with the coaching staff. But you know what? We're 2-time Super Bowl champs now. And that was Marcus was part of the pre-Patrick Mahomes era. I think his behavior might be significantly altered if we were to bring him back in. Did you have anybody you were looking at, whether it be in the draft or free agency?
I kind of looked around, like Kyle Fuller played in Baltimore last year, but he's 31. But I mean, I guess if you're talking about a guy that, you know, they've got so much youth in that cornerback
room. Right.
I mean, all those guys are young, and Snead's the elder statesman. So like,
and you're not really looking for a starter.
You just want a guy that could come in and help break down film and show the guys maybe something they weren't looking for. And, you know, that veteran presence that you don't necessarily need on Sundays, but you need every other day of the week. And there are plenty of guys in here that are around. I mean, Ronald Darby and Bradley Roby and I mean, Shaquille Griffin, guys that are kind of that late 20s or 30 range that are free agents and, you know, wouldn't cost almost anything to bring in. I mean, kind of like the same mold of like the Bashaud Breelands from, you know, 19, like where you just bring a guy in that kind of understands the situation. And I wouldn't mind at all. And in fact, I'd love if they bring in a veteran presence of any kind in the cornerback room, because they're so young that I just think they could use it.
Let's finally close this out with the safety room. And the Chiefs currently have in the safety room Justin Reed, Deion Bush, recently returning, Mike Edwards, obviously coming over from Tampa, and Brian Cook. You know, this is in terms of, I mean, both the age of the room and their tenure with the Chiefs, a very young room. I mean, Justin Reed is obviously the veteran there who they brought in, and Mike Edwards has some experience, but Deion Bush and obviously Brian Cook being the third round pick last year. This is one where I think I'd like to see the Chiefs maybe add another draft pick, probably in the mold of a Brian Cook, who is a third rounder, you know, maybe a third round pick, third, fourth, fifth round pick. I don't see the need for the Chiefs to invest significant draft capital in safety. It's not a position where I'd give up any kind of significant asset to go trade and bring a guy in. I think the free agency pool has kind of been picked over a little bit. Obviously, they brought in Edwards and brought back Deion Bush from the free agency pool. So, you know, they certainly could go back to that. Well, but this is something where I would just say, you know, if they want to go out and add a player in the middle rounds of the draft, I think you could probably call this room good.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I wanted to target old picking grounds from the days of adding Charvarius Ward for not very much for just Parker Ehringer from the Dallas Cowboys. And I think that the Cowboys have a former seventh round pick on their roster, nephew of former All-American and defensive end Javon Kearse. And of course, that is Jayron Kearse. He is a safety.
Oh, Jayron.
Yeah, he's he's 6'4", and he played at Clemson. He was on, he's on the last year this year of a cheap $10 million 2-year deal with Dallas. So it's not like, you know, he's going to cost an arm and a leg to go get out and trade for him. But I just like his profile. I think he's cheap enough and kind of long and kind of, you know, I just like his athletic profile, and I think he would be a good fit in the safety room as just they just need a couple more bodies. It's not really like they need, you know, a ton of impact there, like you were saying, but that would be a guy that I would say, hey, if you were okay with giving us Charvarius Ward, why don't we just keep going back to that well until it doesn't work?
Yeah, they really made out like bandits in that trade. So, you know, I mean, if you can steal the Cowboys blind, why not do it? The specialists, no need to make any additions or changes there. I feel like we're good there. And that means we've done it. We've gone through the entire roster.
We did it.
It's Always Sunny in Cheese Kingdom.